Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by the bearded Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hello, friends.
The bearded Brian Brushwood.
I feel like you got to put air quotes around my beard in relation to Justin Robert Young's, but that's fine. I'll take air quotes bearded.
Brian, you're the guy that went to go work on the sea vessel, you know, the going out to sea, the sea captain, you know.
I'm the innocent kid who comes back slightly edged, yeah. but still not full bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. You had a beard because you had to grow a beard, but all that.
Yeah.
And also, I'm Andrew Main, and of course, joining us as always is our producer extraordinaire, the clean shaven Bryce Castillo.
Hi. I haven't shaved in like a day.
The beards and the babies.
I'm getting my 24-hour shadow.
Yeah. How long does it take for you to get a measurable shadow? Have you ever considered growing any facial hair?
I did. Remember when I moved down here, I was for like a while. But now it'll take like 36 hours or so for a little bit of a shadow.
I don't know. I smell a night pretty attack bit.
We can do a race. Do you know what I shaved last?
When?
It'd be Friday.
Oh my God.
And you look like you just shaved yesterday. Wow.
But yeah, you're probably at that good middle definition. You're at whatever you have on your face is just enough to make the lines clearer on your face.
Yeah. Clear lines.
Yeah, Andrew grows facial hair in a way that you would actually style facial hair. Like that's the thing is he just grows this perfect, like I just have this gigantic thicket that
I don't waste it here. I just grow here and I'm done. I'm just
yeah. Oh, and it actually conforms to the time. Like when Mambo number 5 was going, he just had the one little thin mustache.
That's what I want to see a Bryce grow. It's just a pencil thin villain mustache.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember I didn't know that I couldn't grow the sides until like I was like working on like a TV shoot and they're like, oh, why don't you just grow it out a bit? I'm like, okay. A week later, I'm like, huh, funny thing.
Is that demo photo, the promo photo for Don't Trust Andrew Made, is that the hairiest you've ever been? Because it's just the slightest little.
Oh, so that no, it's not the hair. I've gotten some book modes where I've gotten a little shaggier, but that was, I had a trimmer set to that. And so that was the designated length.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't let him lie to you. That was full CGI. They had to put a mustache on him like Superman.
Or the reverse Superman?
Yeah, they had to reverse Superman him.
Yeah, that was ones they shot in the middle of production, like they had a photographer show up like in the middle of like doing a bunch of stuff that like, oh, come this way, we're gonna grab some photos. So gentlemen, we've got a reader response.
What?
Yes. Listener response, apparently. Listener wrote
I'm sure they read, too. I mean, if they wrote a response, they're literate.
Yes. So this is from Daddy Otho. I hear you guys drone on and on about VR and problems with it, etc. You've done two stories in the past last year or so that would have solved this problem. The first was the tens where the lady reporter went to the police shootout simulator and did crappy. Then they hooked you up to leads to her forehead and she damn near aced it. The second story is that the blind guy hadn't seen his wife since they've been married for like 20 years. They tapped into his ocular nerves and were able to let him see her. I believe this comment was, we still got some work to do on this. Surely by now, they ought to take the two and merge them with current software and technology, stick an implant somewhere, and you experience VR anytime you want.
Can I take a stab at an initial reaction to this? There's an availability misplaced heuristic happening in that one. Most of the stuff we're talking about is commercially available, mass scale, affordable stuff, but it's being combined in this letter with advanced, highly speculative, incredibly, insanely expensive, yet to be tested solutions. And I think it's the right impulse, but the wrong time. I think this is a 5 to 10 years from now solution.
Yeah, I mean, that is the direction. That's the goal. The goal is, or one goal, one pathway is like the Neural Lace, which is a company, you know, a technology being worked on to basically put a thing in your head that allows you to have this sort of full access. These things are still at their early infancy phase. And the problem, like a lot of people have with technology, is understanding that you have to go through these several steps to get to this other point. You know, if you want to have why don't we just build faster microprocessors? Like, well, we don't know how to make the chip smaller right now. You know, we have ideas in the laboratory, but it'll take a couple of years to figure out how those methods will apply here. Or we don't know where to connect things into the brain or how much sensory input to do this. We need experiments and we need to do this. There's a finite number of people, finite number of companies and researchers working on this problem. And you just have to wait for certain discoveries to come along. A great example of that was like the discovery of the, you know, the blue laser, the blue diode. You know, this was a thing we knew was theoretically possible. And we knew once you had a blue diode, you had a much smaller wavelength, which meant instead of like pits on CDs that were this big, you know,
the size of a silver dollar, let's imagine.
Yeah, they're like tiny, much, much tinier. So that's where you're able to take something the same size as a CD and all of a sudden have a Blu-ray and increase the data on there, because once you had that shorter wavelength. But that blue diode took a long time to get to, you know, took a researcher. What's that?
I had a profound moment because I realized the first time I had read about this problem was, I believe, 20 years ago. Bryce might be able to find the article, but it was in Wired magazine, and the title was True Baru, a play on the fact that that L's and R's are challenging to translate from Japanese back, True Baru. And it was talking about the quest, and it had not been solved at the time. It was saying, when we get this, it will change everything. And it did, you know, it quintupled or tenfolded the carrying capacity of a single bit of physical media. Although interestingly, we've now abandoned physical media.
Yeah. I believe it got the Nobel Prize too, from Ruska, the guy who developed it. But anyhow, yeah, it was one of these things where you have to go through an exhaustive list of things to figure out how you're supposed to get from here to there. And you have to at some point sort of say, hey, maybe I don't wait for them to come up with this. Maybe I work on this, or I get into this field, you know. And if you're like, you're not an engineer, you're like, oh, well, maybe I, you know, if it's something you're passionate about, like it's amazing how many things happen because somebody was peripherally involved. I'm like, why isn't somebody doing this? I'm like, I don't know. Why don't you do that?
And also, I think that there is, you know, creating a breakthrough in physical disc technology is one thing that has an obvious benefit, specifically at the time that it was being developed, considering what a gigantic leap CDs were to tapes in terms of the profitability for the recording industry. It's another thing when we're looking at what is kind of a controversial sort of concept of trying to find a higher fidelity VR by way of any kind of biomechanical solution beyond putting on a thing in front of your head and having a monitor show you a different world.
And, you know, and what the starting point for that right now, like the Neuralace is working on interfaces for people who've lost limbs, is to help amputees, whatever, be able to connect better with electronics, robotics, et cetera. And that's a great starting point. And then working their way forward to, like, can we enable the blind to see, et cetera. But it's just the incremental steps. And it's just, if we're just consumers of this stuff, we're just sort of like, where is this? Like, I want my VR glasses that don't have to hook up to a computer and that are self-contained, the full wide field of view, et cetera. And you can sit there and you can look at Moore's law and look at, you know, microprocessor speed development and look at, you know, screen development, how, you know, pixel density, whatever. And you can see at what point, you know, we're getting right now, Qualcomm has these new chipsets that are going to make that possible. They've unveiled them now. And we knew probably 2 years ago this was coming now. So, you know, this part's going to come now, which means that probably summer or late this year, we're start going to see, you know, the standalone stuff that both Oculus and Vive have proposed are going to get a lot better. And other people are going to get into the fray. And probably by, you know, a year from now, these things are going to get even better because we say there are these incremental steps. And at some point it makes this possible. It's like the iPad. Microsoft had the tablet which was in many ways was like, oh, it's the same, but it didn't have the power density. It didn't have the other things you needed, the display density, the power density. And so it was too soon, not because it was so great. It was too soon. It was because the technology wasn't there yet. Once they could, Apple could fit the battery and the display into that form factor, they said, yep, we're ready to release this thing. They couldn't have done it before. And that's how things work. Unless you get a rapid innovation. So electric cars too, like, you know, without the cell phone industry and portables and all that, fueling rechargeables and bringing the cost down and that technology there, we still wouldn't have practical electrical cars.
No, wrong. I saw a movie about devious.
They buried a electric car. I saw Ed Begley Jr. crying at
Tom this. Hanks loved his car. Why it was fast. Take it away from him?
Oh, there goes the narrative. You know, one narrative we never want to see go away.
What's that, Andrew? Show.
This show.
Oh, my God. You can support the show by going to patreon.com/weirdthings. Oh, also, so I was listening to our friends at the Ice Cream Social, and they got themselves a little vanity URL that just redirects. I would love if we just got a series of vanity URLs that redirected to patreon.com/weirdthings, because as much as we want to remind people that patreon.com/weirdthings is where you can go to support the show, it would be amazing if we had, you know, like new Bryce Vegas .com that we could don't go there because we don't own it.
This is revisiting the domain smack idea, like inject your commentary into the domain that you make sure to use promo code Scam School at checkout to get 15% off.
Well, anyway, don't spend money there yet. Spend money on us. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you can make sure that this show continues to operate each and every week. We are here for you at your pleasure, and you will get early access to the After Things podcast if you become a Patreon. That is what many people consider to be a real boon. If you are a creator, if you're a maker, if you're somebody who has an entrepreneurial spirit to you or just wants to get more done in your off time, then After Things, I would say, is a must listen. And I say that because I have to listen because I'm on the show and I think it's a great part of my week. I think it could be a great part of your week as well. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Head on over there right now.
And we will have an After Things today this week, I believe.
Yes.
I think we missed a few weeks on that, but we're back. It's back.
Nobody has a hard out, so we're gonna hard in into After Things after the show.
Okay, we'll workshop it.
So talking about crazy tech, I got some other kind of crazy tech. I had one story I was gonna do, but I'm like, oh wait, I need to do this one. All right, space is cool, right?
Well, space is cool. It's very cool by definition. Some might say it's absolute zero.
All right, Tyson.
I don't know how to respond to that, Brian.
It's not absolute zero. It's absolute zero if you go to the very fringes of it, away from all the stars and all this. Blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah. I mean, we'll just move on. Okay.
Brian, your dad joke just hit the atmosphere, just like out of
us. I've been listening to some cool, it's gonna be what involved one of my picks. But listen to this isn't my pick, but relating to Jack Ma about Alibaba, and then another pick I'm going to talk about Jeff Bezos. And one of the things they talk about, like, if what you're doing isn't crazy, then maybe it's not worth doing. And they're talking about, like, so how, you know, doing something that's like super, super crazy. So, what they talk about, you know, is, you know, thinking more sensible things like, you know, e-commerce, stuff like that, et cetera. But, how about for space travel, for getting things into space, you've got rockets. We've talked about space elevators and stuff. Now we've got a company called Spin Launch.
Spin Launch? Man, this sounds...
It sounds like by dealing with them, you'll have to deal with a few spin doctors.
I'm blowing the whistle. Two dad jokes in the same segment. I can't.
Did you say two princes?
And if you make another dad joke, well, then we'll stop now.
What is spin launch?
Spin launch is an idea of getting things into orbit or getting things into space. But what they want to do is basically build like a big centrifuge that spins, builds up a tremendous amount of velocity, and then lets this thing fly.
So I'm going to assume this is probably not for human cargo, but if you have robust heart, because keep in mind, all the way back to Heinlein's, the moon is a harsh mistress. They basically, they mined stuff in on the moon, and then to send it home, they just put it in a giant gun and shot it on out, and it could handle, you know, because it was raw ore, didn't matter that it was like, you know, 20, 30, I'm making up these numbers, G's or whatever, but obviously that doesn't work for humans. But considering how much of what we want to get into space doesn't mind 50, 60 G's or however many it is, that's a brilliant idea. I think there's something to this.
I'm all for exploring it, and like absolutely for hard mass cargo, things like that, we aren't worried about like, you know, killing people. Absolutely a great idea. And I think that, and that's one of the things too, is sometimes you'll hear people like, oh, why don't they do this electromagnetic rail to send people into space? It's 'cause if we were 2D people, that would be great. So it's a very interesting idea that, and I'm glad this company exists. I was just sort of baffled because I read the, article on, where was this, TechCrunch. And they're like, you know, insiders say they want to accelerate stuff up to 3,000 miles an hour. I'm like, well, that won't get you into orbit. So, you know, it's one of these things like I want to hear more from them what they're up to.
So, wait, so 3,000 miles an hour is not enough to get to orbit, huh?
Yeah, orbit, you've got to go, you know, 18,000 miles an hour faster.
Okay. Well, what I'm imagining, I'm out of my element on this, but I wonder if, I don't know, rocket scientists, write us.
What's your question for what do you want the rocket scientist to write you?
Well, I can.
It's like hopes and dreams.
No, three. Doing. So you have the gravity well, and let's say you start at zero at 3,000 miles an hour, right? And you don't have any rocketry giving you an additional boost. Now, yes, when you launch a rocket, you start at zero and you start off at 1 mile an hour, 5 mile an hour, 600 miles an hour, and you get faster and faster and faster. But that's a case where you have a constant thrust, and the constant thrust is combining with the lack of gravity as you get farther and farther and the lack of atmospheric drag.
Let's back up. You're even at the International Space Station level, the amount of gravity you have is 99% what we have right here. So you have to get out of the gravity well, your delta V has to be way more significant. 3,000 delta V you can go up like a sounding rocket can go 3,000 miles an hour. It'll go up into space and then it comes back down because it's not going fast enough to
fall
around.
Enough to get off the earth. Okay, now I'm understanding what you're saying. So you could get up there and kiss the sky with Jimi Hendrix, but then you'd have to fall back down.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there's more.
But then
to
you'd be free falling
like
Tom Petty.
I'm sure they've done this math. Like, oh man, we listened to this podcast.
Okay, yeah, no, that helps me wrap my mind around it a little bit better. So how on earth can you even be 3,000 miles an hour in a case where it's like you're gonna have a sonic boom as you whip this thing around on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, you have rail guns and other high velocity projectile systems send things out. I don't know what the rail gun velocity, the fastest that's ever done. I don't know, but I would imagine that, you know, again, one of the first objects that, you know, we may have, like, you know, one of the Nazi guns, cannons may have sent something up. I forget like what the altitude record was. Maybe, I don't know if it hit Kármán line, which is 60 miles up or not, but I mean, we've had high powered guns and stuff. I mean, we, the bad guys, that, you know, may have been able to do. I think Iran was trying to build one that could have theoretically, you could build a gun to put something into, it'll hit space, but it won't hit orbit because again, it's going to it's not going to be going fast enough to, you know, go that, do that fall around the earth thing.
Hey, I got a question, Andrew. This is hugely speculative, and I apologize that it's a bit of a side jag, but I was thinking about, you know, when Felix Baumgartner jumped from a balloon at the edge of space. It just seems like it should be possible with enough balloons.
Edge of space.
Edge of space in air quotes, right, in trademarked by the Red Bull company. It seems like you – why don't we have a floating platform? Because if you just have enough balloons, you could do the shield helipad up there and then launch rockets off of that.
So the answer is it's a thing that's been talked about. There's an entire I have the book somewhere on this. Dark sky platforms are ideas of basically building these platforms, you know, 100,000. It's the spoiler, Station Breaker 3 takes place on one of those.
Okay.
You got to use hydrogen, you know, basically to get the sort of, you have to have the size of your airbags are humongous. You know, in order to carry any sort, you're talking kilometers long, huge, huge, huge. It's a massive, massive project. Not to say that we won't get there. You know, we've got, yeah, like Larry Page is building the largest like Zeppelin in the world or largest dirigible in the world. You know, there people are getting towards there. But also when you start getting really high up, you've got to have super thin materials. The Dark Sky Station. Yeah, that's a JP Aerospace. You've got to have materials that can withstand, you know, how much, you know, the UV and all that there. And, you know, it's funny was that, I had a friend whose father was a pilot, and his sister was there with her boyfriend, and her boyfriend was talking about like, well, you know, Google and, you know, Google's working on these airplanes that, you know, actually Facebook was working on like this high altitude. I think it was the high altitude airplane that they were going to use for doing internet, you know, like, oh, and they're going to go up to like, you know, 90,000 feet, 100,000 feet. And my friend's like, yeah, my dad shot him down, explained that can't be done. I'm like, ah, guess you and your dad don't read the news. It's been done. It's done on a regular basis, you know, and it's like, but there's that when Google did Project Loon, putting those balloons up, the guy, one of the biggest balloon experts in the world, the guy that Richard Branson worked with to do his around the world flights, Ballard, I think his name was like, yeah, no, they're not. You can't get these things up for more than a few days, a few weeks, you know, but they think they're going to get these things up for months at a time. They just don't know what they're wrong. They don't know what they're doing. Wah, wah. Guess what? They did it. Nobody really tried to make a big effort to do that.
Yeah, I think that that's almost like an after things sentiment that the inherent information efficiency of knowing what can and can't be done is limited not by the intelligence of people who are making their guesses, but is limited by the hard data of people dumb enough to throw real resources and money into highly speculative things like, I don't know, relanding rockets, catching fairings as they land in the sea.
And also it is our network of experts, right? And I put experts in air quotes for those of us watching, that sometimes that we have conventional wisdom for a reason, right? So we can, it is the basis of science is that we are testing these things to see what our reality is. But oftentimes when it comes to business ventures like this or experiments that aren't exactly of tremendous, immediate vital interest in terms of medicine or something, that you just have people like, well, who else are you going to go to, right? Like who else are you going to ask? But people that are like, you can't really do this, or it doesn't really make sense, or it would cost too much. And so what I think is rad about our current era and for whatever you want to say about the, you know, current crop of people who are insanely rich and, you know, anywhere between full true altruism and megalomania are pushing the limits of what we understand about how cheap it is to do a lot of different things. We're trying. We're just, a lot of stuff is happening, and there's probably more behind the scenes that we don't know about that are just experiments that are being cast out into the sea to see whether or not they come back.
I think that, you know, on the subject Brian you brought up with the floating platforms, I think we're going to see some. I think we live in an age now where people will fund crazy stuff. That guy, JP Aerospace, you know, he has his whole book, which I read, you know, goes into how to build an airship that goes to orbit, which is an insane idea. And he lays out the idea of massive kilometer-sized inflatable craft using electric propulsion, maybe some chemical propulsion, taking weeks to basically spiral around and get. And I don't know if that's the in Rancho Cordova, where we are right next to our magic distributor, Murphy's Magic Supply, which always. Yeah. And so he's got it. He lays out his proposal for there. And I don't know how much of this has been really anybody else has independently tried to do the engineering or to see if it works. But man, what a crazy idea. What if you could get that to work? You have this, you take this dirigible up to a station that's hovering around 130,000 feet off the surface of the Earth. And then from there, you transfer through a enclosed, you know, pressurized cylinder into another vehicle, this huge kilometer-sized craft, sit down. Don't have to sit down. You can just stand there because it moves at such a leisurely pace as it starts to spiral upwards and gradually, like a cruise ship, build up enough velocity until it gets into orbit.
Well, and all of these conversations change about what is and isn't possible when you, and this is a very weird thing to consider, but we talked about the Peter Diamandis book, Bold, and about how when you build a company nowadays, you build expecting technologies that do not currently exist to come along in time for your stuff to scale. And that's the reason Google's a success, is because they expected the cost of storage to essentially go down to zero, which it did. And Microsoft was a success because they wrote fatty bad code, knowing
you're fair.
Okay, fatty bad code, knowing that it will work when processors got fast enough to do it. And they were right. And so likewise, there's material developments that it's like you look at it and like there does not exist any material that can make this possible. Therefore, stop thinking about it. And it's like, no, start thinking about it, because we live in an age where materials are being discovered all the time. And the person who has a business plan, the person who has figured out the economic models, the person who's thinking 20 years in the future is going to be the one best positioned, as we've seen with SpaceX.
Yeah, and using them as an example, and one of Elon Musk's favorite thing is you check your base principles, your base assumptions, like bring it back to the base assumptions are there. You know, we can't do it because of X, because, you know, you could say, you know, we can't build a warp drive because we don't really know how. There's theoretical things based on theories that have never been proven, so we're not going to go jump into that. But could you build a rocket that's able to land again? And be like, no, you can't do it because it's too heavy. Okay, is there enough energy there? Yeah, but it's too heavy. And then it's like, okay, well, can we build tanks that are lighter? And you're like, no, they tried in the 90s. They couldn't. Wait a second. So if the tanks were light enough and there was a light enough material, you could. And that was a problem in the 90s in the National Space Plane. And then now with graphite tanks, guess what? Problem solved. And that was getting to those, check that, you know, like maybe it wasn't, it was figuring out why it wasn't possible. And it was not because it wasn't possible, just you were waiting there. You have to sort of figure out, like, is it because it's the math doesn't work or because we just haven't found the right solution?
Yeah, that's one of the things that whenever anybody says we can't do blank, and it's sometimes I say it out loud, but always I say it quiet, is I say yet.
Yeah.
That can't be done yet. You know, and it's like I almost want to make it a verbal tick whenever I hear that yet.
Yeah. Somebody wanted to know, would an ion drive work in the upper atmosphere? Yeah, you can do electrostatic propulsion. You know, you can do it on at sea level. You know, look up lifters. Look up electrostatic lifters. It's basically the same principle. You're just getting a little electrical charge to flee with an ion. So, gentlemen, I got one more story to talk about here.
Before we move on, one of my just because we're thinking about non-conventional ways to get to orbit, I'm sure there are a million things wrong with it. And I think I described it to you in the past, Andrew, and you told me why it can't happen. But one of my favorite parts of Seven Eves takes place at an unimaginable point in the future where somebody basically rides thermals wearing a wingsuit of some variety up to the point where they encounter what they call bolos. A picture of bolo, you know, you got a center of mass at one end and the other. And it's sort of bolo. Imagine, a bolo basically orbiting the Earth that is so big that the bottom part dips down to the tip of the atmosphere while the top part rolls forward, and somebody would ride the thermals all the way up, maybe, you know, with some other magic future stuff. And then the idea was you had a 1 minute window when the ball came down and you just scooped in and you laid down. And then you experience, you know, 3 to 5 G's as it whipped you up into the sky, at which point, you know, you're now
at an orbit, basically.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, Stevenson gets his physics, so I'm sure that there's a that thing probably would, on paper, would probably work or something. I forgot what our discussion was about. Like, yeah, because bolos are another. There are crazy ideas out there, like using like whip catapults, bolos, all sorts of other stuff that, you know, you're like, yeah, let's get to that point when we get to try this stuff. Yeah. You know, that's. You know, there was a they tried tethers were another interesting idea. Actually, they tried a tether experiment with the space shuttle, which was to use a long tether, because the idea is if you have these long tethers that you can, you know, you can have a little momentum here and I'll get a lot of momentum at the other end of it. It's a great way to it could be a great way to sort of whip things into higher orbits and stuff. The problem they had was, and it, not to say it wasn't a solvable problem, but it was the unexpected problem, was all of the vibrations went back and forth. And remember the Tacoma Narrows Bridge? You know, it's that.
Oh, yeah, that's footage. Classic copyright-free 19-footage of the bridge just scarily flopping left and right.
It's got this wind, this sort of steady wind, and it keeps applying enough little force to it, momentum to it, that it just keeps vibrating more and more and more and more, and it has no way to dissipate that. That's why, like, airplane wings aren't rigid. They flex. It's to get rid of all of that kinetic energy. So the problem they had with the tether was basically that the tether was, oh my God, we're watching this. People are walking away from the bridge, and this bridge is starting to just undulate.
That's like a fun house.
Is that insane? It looks like it's made of Jell-O. It's terrifying.
Yeah. So anyhow, the problem they had initially with tethers was that, like, they would just snap because of all that force would just keep going back in there. But again, there are ways to arrest, you know, the dampened to sort of that stress, things like this, use variable lengths. I mean, these are solvable problems, but we just need to go there to go do it. So how about biohacking? You guys, anybody up for some biohacking? Maybe doing a little CRISPR, DNA cocktail
here? I can see no downside to unlimited amounts of us doing biohacking.
Let's biohack it. Biohacking it. We're doing it.
So biohacking is basically, you know, using sort of radically new forms of technology like CRISPR, et cetera, whatever. It doesn't, and not necessarily that, but other things to sort of, you know, change your biology, maybe to cure things, to do that, using do-it-yourself gene editing kits, et cetera, to kind of make this stuff happen. And I think the rate of development, I think that one of the problems we have when it comes to medical stuff is I think that we have a system that is antiquated, that is so risk adverse that it kills people instead of helping heal people. And we need to radically overhaul the way in which we test things and do stuff. And personally, I think if somebody wants to try to, you know, redo their own DNA or whatever, sure. Granted, this is how every sort of zombie scenario begins. I'm all for this. Biohacker Hosea Zahner recently told The Atlantic he felt partly responsible for other biohackers' foolhardy experiments. Maybe trying unregulated treatments you saw on the internet isn't the best idea after all.
Oh.
So he himself, it doesn't sound like, has experienced any ill effects from his experiment, mm-hmm. but by bringing a populist vibe to this movement, he feels responsible for people who will be less responsible than himself.
Yeah, I would say that sounds like a fair assessment of my interpretation of what this is.
Oh my God!
Because you've had what happened.
Quote
you've had
the article when Hosea Zahner watched a biotech CEO drop his pants at a biohacking conference and inject himself with an untested herpes treatment, he realized things had gone off the rails.
Yeah, and that's what's going on. You've got people who are trying these radical treatments. Now, I'll say the other side of it too is like. You know, one of the criticisms, like, this person who tried their own, you know, anti-HIV, you know, treatment. Like, well, this person's living with HIV. And frankly, I understand why they would, you know, think that maybe they want to try something like that. You know, like it's that, you know, some of these people who are doing some of these radical things are people dealing with conditions and dealing with stuff. And it's not like, nah, I'm going to give myself a unicorn head. You know, it's like, It is reckless, it is, to be sure, and I think that, you know, there needs to be a lot more caution there. And I think the problem is there are people who are treating these things like in a pseudoscientific way. They're taking real scientific sort of things and like, well, if I put this thing in here and kind of ignoring the complexities of that, and I think that's kind of frightening.
Yeah, this is the challenging thing is freedom means the freedom to be stupid. And
yep.
As stupid as these experiments are, there's a non-zero chance that humanity in the whole will benefit from the stupid, stupid things that stupid people are doing unsafely. So it's complicated. I don't know how to feel about it because, I don't know. I'm a believer that on balance, humanity wins.
I do think that there is probably a few notches on that dial between like, let's celebrate the guy injecting himself with untested herpes treatments and on stage to the adulation of however many people were at that biohacking conference, and a understanding that there can be free testing, specifically when they are, dealing with these situations. Like, right? I mean, it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
My concern, and again, it's not to say, oh, I'm going to put a blame on any particular party. One of the earliest clinical trials of gene replacement therapy killed people, right? And it turned out it was bungled. There was just a lot of things were done wrong. And the problem was that given the climate, the reaction we have, that all of a sudden a bunch of senators who are some of the most scientifically ignorant people. And both parties. Let me make that very clear.
I didn't even say the word illiterate correct. You said scientifically and I said illiterate. They're scientifically illiterate.
No, ignorant. 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 And I'm going to say this right now, both parties. Don't say it's those people over there that believe this. Now, excuse me, I'm going to go into Chipotle because it's GMO free. it is, you're all's dumb, okay? And these are the, these senators are the ones that are like deciding on these things. Okay. And I've met a couple times, like privately with like some senator people, and I've been terrified, from very pro science, how ignorant they were. And they will decide, we got to ban this therapy. It's killing people. It's murdering people. And all of a sudden, because somebody screwed up, did something somewhere, this stuff gets delayed. Funding's hard, is hard. It gets dried up, whatever. And that's a very frustrating thing. And that's the thing, not to say that, it's I'm like Brian. Like, I think she'd be able to do whatever you want. Unfortunately, we live in a situation where somebody does something stupid. We're like, well, now nobody should be able to do this. It's like, great.
So I guess that is the idea. The idea is then a lighter hand when it comes to legislating. You know, that to understand that there are going to be consequences, if not outright stupidity, but as long as the casualties are understood, then legislation should be light-handed.
Well, remember the world we live in right now. 23andMe used to give you this nice report that said, hey, there's a correlation between these genes and these diseases, stuff like this. To my knowledge, not a single person freaked out, because if you did see this thing happen, what did you do?
You went to a doctor and said, I've been informed that this is a thing. Will you please talk me through what this means?
Medical ethicists, whatever, like, no, people can't. This is wrong. They're prescribing, they're diagnosing, whatever. FDA is like, nope, you guys can't do this. They shut down that thing. Said, nope, we can't tell you this thing that, by the way, you can take this report. You can go use this free open source tool, plug it in there, get the same data. But no, we can't let you, because you might not be able to handle this, which is the most patronizing. And that kills people. I'm sorry. Like, that is and we live in a world, too, where
I'll tell you what, politically, there's not a safer position to be. Politically, there's never a safer statement to make than we need more time to figure out if this is safe. Like, who's going to disagree with that, right?
You and I, but
because we're insane.
And that's the frustrating part. And we live in, there is, and I don't know what to make of this, but there are some people who argue that, too many women get their breasts removed because they find out they have a gene, that relates to you, that they might have the defective gene or whatever for that. But there's medical professionals all across the way enabling that, And so there's so much. It's frustrating. It's just all of a sudden that we have this thing like, oh, maybe you should think about this or whatever. Nope. Now you got to go to your doctor and ask them about it. And good luck with that. So,
well, I feel like we're circling around. And this also ropes in some of the conversation we were having in the pre-show. But the idea of our kind of protected shamans in our culture. And this is something that Andrew and I have kind of talked about forever, specifically with doctors, that it's like, man, there is so much medically that I would love to just have a AI for. Like, yep. Just little things at any time, day or night, judgment free, that I can say, hey, what about this? And it just general data, and like how much of our conversations that we have these kind of protected moments, these ceremonies with our shamans, where we walk in and we have X amount of time, and there is cultural reverence that we pay, and how much of these things that we have conversations with our general practitioners would be, I mean, better than something that, you know, we have with like WebMD, which is just, you know, nonsense clickbait.
WebMD equals you have cancer. Like any possible symptom.
Or you're pregnant. Or you're pregnant and your baby has cancer. Like, but that would just be like some back and forth that we can have. And it's what I've loved about my health insurance, Kaiser, which also owns or runs the hospitals and doctor networks. They just have an easy app where you can like take a picture of your mole and be like, hey, can you forward that around your mole division real quick and tell me whether or not there's like immediate stuff? And there's no reason why now with machine learning that we just can't have, I can't have that instantly to just be like, not to tell me your mole is cancer, but to just be like, hey, look, through looking at a gigantic database of weird skin discolorations, go see your doctor.
Yeah, well, and like, plus also, it's think about it, because when it comes to a mole's a good example, because it's when you go in and you have a concern on your mole, what do they tell you? They say, let's take a picture of it, schedule an appointment in 6 months, come back, and we'll do it again. I mean, it's like, that. What a huge disruption to your schedule. If it was an app, if it was a machine learning thing, it's like, take a picture once a week, in 6 weeks, we'll have an idea whether or not, you know, we will give you a you probably don't want to say something. We will assess, you know, in a shorter time with higher fidelity, using more precise, more objective information than, you know, two doctor visits over a 6 month period.
Yeah, no, and I thankfully we're getting more of that. Not as much as we'd like, and not at the pace at which we want for. But I think that one of the things we need to be careful of is just that you get all of a sudden you'll get. Different groups. I was surprised as all get out that the FDA came out against, you know, 23andMe and said, no, you can't do this. That to me was just like, who is being affected? Because if you have this, like, oh, I have a lung cancer disease, you know, gene, like, what do? Go talk to the doctor. Like, it just was like, it was just the
flow chart was not terribly complex. It was send in your stuff, no matter what else happens, last bit, go see a doctor.
Yeah.
But it just came from, there are some people that think that it should be the shaman, should be there's this wall. No, regular people can't have this. They don't know how to handle it. And the idea that you're stupid and you don't know what to handle. And granted, you're like, yeah, people are, we do dumb things, to be sure. But, you know, it's this patronizing sort of attitude. And again, this is the same FDA that gave us for years all the wrong information on salt and killed people. Gave us a number of wrong things, food pyramid stuff, saccharin, that was completely not based on science.
Yeah, sure. However, to be fair, our bureaucratic, very slow, sometimes people killing FDA also spared us from the horrors of thalidomide, because by the time, because thalidomide hadn't even been, it's a 5 to 7 year process to get a drug approved in the United States. And so people were moving faster. So you can point to the horrible stuff.
I'm not against, you know, before something goes into wide thing, making sure that stuff's tested. Let me make that very clear. Sure. I'm not into the Wild West frontier and that. I'm a little L. But and that's the problem we get into. It's like NASA. Like, oh, you like, I get critical of SLO. Oh, so you hate NASA? Like, no, I love NASA. I just hate that there's a bureaucracy there that takes something that things cost 10 times what they first say they're going to cost, and they take 10 years longer. I hate that. You want to triple NASA's budget? Great. Just redo the way they spend their money, and it's fine. It's like FDA. Like,
well, and the best example that I heard you two pitch to me is it's right now, previously NASA was doing the equivalent of running the post office and insisting on building all of their own vehicles rather than buying them as a fleet from someone.
Of course, you know, it's like when NASA went to the moon, the average age of a NASA employee was 27. Now it's 48.
Oh, wow.
because they're all still there.
So, you know, it's a different sort of, you know, mentality there. Well, but
I guess here's the thing, and this is this might get to kind of some of the philosophical underpinnings of Brian, Andrew, and myself. But when it comes to these things, like the FDA, NASA, I don't think any of us are necessarily in any kind of blanket way against. It's just, hey, let's take a look at the hits and misses. Let's try to do more of the hits. Let's critically assess the misses. let's just look at these gigantic, massive organizations critically. And instead of just putting on a shirt saying, boo you, or hooray this. Like, let's understand that they're gigantic, flawed machines, and we should always be doing our best to optimize them.
You know, I think a lot of it comes to, like, that we talked about before, is the weird inappropriate use of the precautionary principle. You know, it's this, well, if we don't do this, you know, if we do this, then people, if we shorten the amount of time in which these things are tested, you know, then people might die. Like, yeah, and, you know, there's a metric. And I mean, you know, my biggest thing that I criticize was the, you know, the Human Genome Project. This was a project that's led now to therapies and treatments and stuff that are helping, you know, come up with treatments for disease. When that Human Genome Project was first started, they figured it was going to take them like 10 years to make this thing, 10 years to map the genome, to get the map of the human genome. Along the way, Craig Venter, who was working for the National Institutes of Health, and said, hey, listen, I think we got as we're going to grant, said, I think we got a faster way to do this. You know, we've got a faster way because now we can use supercomputers. When this thing was first conceived in the 80s, it wasn't possible. Now we can use supercomputers. We can do the shotgun approach. We'll break it up into a bunch of pieces. The computer can put it back together, et cetera. And says we could, you know, accelerate this thing by several years. Took it to the heads, and they're like, no, we're funded for 10 years. You know, this is we got a good thing going. Why are we going to do this? And it's kind of like, I don't know, because if we do this sooner, it means we can start working on those treatments sooner. Maybe it might be kind of a neat idea. I'm like, no, this is the pace we're working at. And so Venter, long story short, got funded, started his own company, and they started outpacing the government initiative to map the Human Genome Project until finally the government went back and said, hey, you know what? Let's call it a tie.
And we're both great. Also,
yeah, we both crossed
the
bridge.
How are you doing that?
You know, and then shortly thereafter, Bill Clinton passed a law making it illegal to try to patent genes, which and that's a more complex discussion. If that was killed biotech stocks, killed the biotech bubble, and there's some arguments he's made that it was the right call, and then some arguments to say that and then people abandoned trying to cure certain types of orphan diseases and other treatments and stuff there.
Man, that's a real problem, that right now the incentives are in a world where we are quick to demonize drug companies for expensive drugs. It makes it less attractive to invest the incredible amount of speculative resources that it takes to create vaccines or whatever. And instead, if you're a big company and you have shareholders to answer to, then, you know, you're probably going to be better off with the obscene reality of investing your resources in a new pimple cream rather than, you know, trying to cure the next big disease.
Let me think. I don't know what the right answer is on the patenting. I don't know. I mean, I know, but that was an outcome. That was an outcome. Yeah. There's an argument to be made for that. And I bring that up to say that maybe we shouldn't be and all that. There is a great book, Genome Wars, if you want to get into it, about how cellular genomics and whatnot, how what they were doing. It basically goes, they came up with a technique that was much faster at mapping and the rate at which it worked with. Because, hey, computers, turns out, they're kind of a cool idea. This is an area I'm like, I don't want to push any of my politics, whatever, on anybody. I'm just saying that, like, it's just multiple views here. And I go, well, that's an interesting point of view. Huh, that's another interesting point of view, too. That's an interesting point of view. Craig Venter's biography, I actually recommend. That's my pick, is Craig Venter's biography. First one he wrote. He's a fascinating guy, not a guy that's, you know, in the normal everyday conversation, but one of the most brilliant people, I think, of the 20th, 21st century. And his got into, you know, genetics later. I mean, I don't think he got his degree until started a PhD program until his late 20s, early 30s. He was a medic, you know, and then said, huh, this is an interesting area. And the contributions he's made are tremendous. So, right. Anyhow, let's go to the land of make believe. Only it's real. It's real.
Super real, because it's time for Journey Quest!
Previously on
Journey Quest!
No side quests?
No side quests. No side quests. Let's go.
Do you see lasers shooting in the sky? Remember how bright Las Vegas was?
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing compared to this.
Hey, we have a gig here. We're just loading in.
He thumbs up.
Great.
We know. It's sold out.
So we made it to Bryce Vegas with minimal side quests. I'm not going to say none. We definitely
went
to
the whole episode yesterday. Whatever.
but we're about to load in. We're about to face Bryce. We got to figure out, Justin, our objectives, as you stated them again, were first place. See if we could Dave this stuff.
We're
going to
try and Dave his ass. We're going to try and get Bryce. We're going to kill Bryce. We're going to install new Bryce, good clone Bryce, as the new head of Bryce Vegas. Or we're going to try.
Or we're going to initiate the nuke. That's the weapon of last resort. We do have a nuke.
Was there a middle level in between where we didn't Dave him?
The middle level was killing Bryce. I guess the best of all worlds would be to reason with actual Bryce. I want to understand.
I think we tried to reason. Listen, the number one top of the list priority would be to Dave his ass.
Okay, but what do we do with the actual Bryce?
He's dead.
Really?
Okay. He's a brutal dictator who's attempted to murder us repeatedly, and one time sent a rocket by your head so tantalizing you had to reach up and grab it, and it ripped off your hand.
Okay.
Who sends that cute little rocket by you? You can't be held responsible for wanting to grab it.
I think you're convincing me that we should really try to unpack what's going on with Evil Bryce, but that's fine. That's fine. So, wait a minute. You know what occurred to me? Is that part of the Daving? Hold on. Justin, we're in Bryce Vegas. We have, we're sitting here, what was the fake name that we came up with? Mr. McCool or?
Mustache Man? It's Mustache Time. I think that was
it. Oh, yeah. It's Mustache Mike. Yeah,
okay, like but.
Mustache.
Here's the thing. We've got our super weapon. I don't see why we have to wait to encounter the real Bryce before we Dave his ass. We could start Daving it right now and see if we could bluff our way into the palace and then get him to issue a proclamation that there's a fake Bryce afoot and that he needs to be captured. We can worm our way right into the brain of this operation right from the get-go. We don't have to do no big...
We need to be careful, though, because once we let on that we got a Bryce clone out here, Like then if we're not ahead of the game, then it's over.
Well, we're already not ahead of the game in that we have a nuke. And that's negotiation power. We have a nuke and as far as we know, hey Justin, try this on for size. I'm gonna go out and say this was always the true heir. That we've had a usurper on the throne since the beginning. I say we install the rightful ruler of Bryce Vegas.
Number one, that play.
Now, as you say this, but you're driving down the main strip of Bryce Vegas. Okay.
Yeah.
There's Hard Rocker Hotel. Okay.
Hard Rocker.
There's Planet Hollywood.
Bailey's Casino.
Yeah, it's but they're bigger and better and bright. They're all Bryce's. It's all Bryce's.
The Frio All Suites Hotel and Casino.
The Frito, please.
The Jerkus Circus.
Yeah, Bryce's Jerkus. It's all Bryce's this and that.
Starbust.
Now, in the centerpiece of this is, by the way, you're kind of really impressed because there's a hologram of Bryce. And like when the apocalypse happened, there wasn't hologram technology.
Okay, so it seems like they've... Hey, real quick, Justin, I'm just going to take the temperature of the locals so that we can strategize. I roll down the window to the passersby and I say... Who else here has strong feelings about our leader, Bryce?
All of a sudden, a guy turns around, whips his hair around, and there's Bryce. I do.
I was like, Bryce! Hey!
Good self, guys.
And then somebody else says, me too, and it's another Bryce. They both have guitars, and they start to play. Viva Bryce Vega.
Oh, okay. No. This is full of clones, Bryce.
Okay, now I look. I say real quick, I'm like, hey, are you guys clones, or are you just Bryce impersonators?
We're what's the difference, buddy? If you want a photograph, $5. Whatever you want. And they all talk like Elvis, which is weird.
Damn it.
Okay. Well, that's how you can tell the
You
person.
See people wearing Bryce shirts, you know, and it's he's wearing like the Elvis getup, you know, and it's like you just totally you vamped that.
Do we see anybody else that doesn't look like Bryce?
Yeah, lots of people, tourists, everybody, and they're just a few okay. Bryce.
So this is not a total town full of clones.
Yeah. Over there in the corner. No, it's like seeing Elvis in Vegas.
It does seem like there are more Bryce clones than I would like. And we still don't know if they're clones, but.
Yeah, there's a puppet show over there. It's the Brian Jerry puppet
show. Elvises in Las Vegas are clones of Elvis?
Yes. There's a Justin and Brian puppet show going on. Like a guy's little puppet theater there, and the puppets people are paying. And
all right, real quick, I tell the bus driver, stop. And I pull out some binoculars and also audio binoculars so I can listen to this play to find out what the locals think of it. I want to experience the play as close to exactly as it's happening as possible.
So there's a Brian puppet who's sitting in a podcast studio, and he's got a Justin puppet in another little podcast booth like, yeah, we're doing Night's Attacks. Yeah. And then in walks this Bryce puppet, walks up to Brian and says, I got the control board ready, but I just heard the news that there's going to be some sort of apocalyptic disaster. Oh, Bryce, well, looks like you got to go home. I'm going into my shelter. Bye. And he kicks Bryce out the door.
And how does the crowd react to this?
Boo, boo. I mean, they're throwing their jumbo margaritas at Brian.
Their yard of margaritas.
is there an epic conclusion to this puppet show?
Well, then we get we see there's this Bryce just walking along this little road. I mean, just a piece of paper, but it's like it's going as rolling sure, background.
The Japanese puppetry theater where it's like they're making it look like he's passing through areas.
Yeah, some some Terry Gilliam-esque sort of, you know, effects going on there. And all of a sudden you hear. You know, there's lights go out on the little puppet stage, like a little black curtain. It says apocalypse. We don't know what it is, by the way. And then it rolls back up and Bryce is standing, little Bryce puppet, big head, is standing in the middle of this devastation. It's like, what has become of me? What has become of me? I've been abandoned. And people are like, oh, no, poor Bryce. He says, I will rebuild it. I will build it so all may come. People start cheering.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're just ancillary cannon fodder.
Yeah, I lean out the window and with my hat down so nobody could see me, I say, skip to the Mecca, Bryce, because I want to see how we get to that part of the story.
I don't know if we get that part. I think this is just the saccharine hero's journey of how the Bryce Vegas was founded.
Okay.
Bryce stares up at the sky and says, I will unite them all with... And some cops come running up and say, this is an unlicensed puppet show. You've got to move along.
I say, boo!
You there in the RV!
Yes.
Oh, it's those guys. What are your fight names?
I'm Mike Mustache. It's mustache time.
I'm the other one. It's Mike Mustache and the other one. That's our team
Go
name.
Right in. Keep going down the strip.
Okay.
Going down the strip. Remember, the police escort's like, listen, how long do we have to stop for? Remember,
okay, all right. Keep on going.
Continue on. And then it says you're heading right towards Bryce's Palace.
Bricer's Palace with the laurel wreaths all over.
Yeah. And a bunch of statues of Bryce. Very heroic poses all around there.
I lean over to Justin and I say, this place is all right. It's no Bryce DeLay Bay. But we can deal with it.
I know.
Last time, a friend of mine said the cop pulls up there, writes you a ticket, hands it to the window. Dad joke.
Oh no!
I know. Everyone knows all the cool kids stay at the Bryce Mapolitan.
$250 ticket. So it says tonight.
You stop to think of more puns. Like, hold on, I can think of another one.
There's not much you can do with MGM. It could be the BC, no, KGB. No.
But I do. I had a great time at the Bryn.
And the Bruxer.
All right. Hey, look. All right. So we're going to the venue. Let's get to the venue.
So you're at Caesar's Palace. You're in there. There's the big waterfall. There's everything in front of there. There's fountains, all that stuff. These statues, these, you know, great Roman statues standing up front. You're like, of Bryce. Then they start to move and take different poses. And you realize they're actually just dudes who look like Bryce posing, painted white.
I pinch one casually, like in a painful way, trying to mess up his gig. Just trying to get him to break character. I resent all of this. I just pinch real hard and then keep on going.
It's like, ow, dude.
It's like, that's right. That's right. Because this is the other one.
So
Mike Mustache and the other one.
But first, the big billboard, the weigh-in.
Oh. Justin,
yeah,
you know wrestling. Is there any secret skullduggerous tricks we could do to win a weigh-in? Also, how do you win a weigh-in?
Okay, so number one, they don't have weigh-ins in professional wrestling. Okay. They have weigh-ins in
real wrestling,
competitive fighting.
Yeah,
I think if we're in more of the gray area that we are like doing a legitimate fight.
Sure.
Then there's only one sure way: pay off the athletic commission.
Okay.
Also, why are you assuming you're going to fail the weigh-in?
Well, I mean, wait, there's not failing. I just want every advantage going into this. We're about to take on who knows what here.
Also, the way that you win the weigh-in is really just there as a press opportunity to hype the fight.
Okay.
So we're yeah.
Okay. So first of all, I'm going to assume that the weigh-in refers to our biological weight. Both of us should refuse to disconnect our equipment. I latch on my chainsaw arm, and I put on my prosthetic dong, the heaviest one that I have.
Wouldn't you want to get weighed without that so that you would be matched up with a lighter opponent?
No, we got to intimidate them. Justin, you weigh in. Insist on wearing your mech armor when you weigh in. Don't back down on it.
All right. It's mustache time.
All right, so we march in with all our goods on. We're like, we're ready to weigh in.
All right, what's your music that's playing as you go in?
It's
Carly Rae Jepsen. We want to play to the locals.
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Which song?
Run away with me.
Call me maybe.
Run away with me.
Sure.
All right, we go marching down.
All right, you're marching. It's big, huge crowd. Flash bulbs going off everywhere. You know, photographers, everybody, people crowding around. I mean, it's an amazing sight to be seen. You're like, man, who would know there was an apocalypse? You're like, oh, a lot of these people have weird skin lesions and sunburns too. Probably radiation poisoning. Okay, so you guys strut down the middle, ladies and gentlemen, the challengers. What's your names?
As of now, they're Mr. Mustache and the other one.
Asimov
Mike
now,
Mustache.
Mr. Mustache.
Mike Mustache and the other one.
And Asimov, what? As of now? As of now.
As of now. As of now, yes.
Say that again one more time, clearly. I got to write
Mustache
this stuff down.
And the other one. Mike Mustache and the other one.
Mike Mustache and the other one.
Yeah! I rev my engine. I go...
Sorry, this is a no smoking casino, sir. You'll have to put out your chainsaw.
I gut him. I shove. I murder him where he stands. I shove the running chainsaw right in his gut and split him right up the top so he bisects and opens like an orchid.
And then I grab both sides of him with my mech hands and I comically make his head talk. It's mustache time! And then casually
cops around you. Like, you know, we have laws here.
And I say...
And then, I look right in the officer's face and I say, I'm sorry, officer. He didn't know we couldn't do that.
All right. We're giving you a warning. And here's a token for a free spin. Okay.
Thank you, sir. And we make our way.
What's funny is I can't even deny that I've seen Justin use this tactic enough times that I'm like, yeah, it tends to work.
Well, you guys make the stage. There's the announcer. Like, all right, ladies and gentlemen, here we have Mustache Man and the other one here to weigh in. Up on the scale. Really, this is formality, as you know, in most.
Yeah.
Hey, you know. I just want to let everybody know that this scale sucks. Just like everybody out here sucks. You all suck. It's mustache time, and you will all know what mustache time means when we destroy whatever a-holes come from New Bryce Vegas at our fight. Right, Brian? Tell him, Brian.
You heard it from the man himself, the man with the mouse, the mustache south. Whatever he said goes, and your town blows. I've got the time to make every couplet rhyme. I'm going to rev this engine, and then I'm going to
stop talking
because nothing rhymes with engine.
You want to know what? Hey, other one, pull out your dong and flip it around for all these good people.
Okay, so I do, and I reach down my pants, and I remove my prosthetic dong, and I flop it in an old lady's face who prudishly, hopefully, reacts horrified. Woo!
Anyway, bring on the J-Brones that are going to get it from Mr. Mike Mustache and the other one. It's mustache time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the challenges now for the reigning Bryce Vegas champion. Oh, did I just say champion? I did, because it's only one. It's only one. It only takes one man. One man to defeat them all. I give you the one, the only, Grandmaster himself, the great leader, the sequined one, he who's beat knows no rivals, Bryce.
Goes super dark. Lights start to planet, spin around. Laser beams shoot through the air. And then in the middle of the ceiling, a big circular stage starts to lower down. Now, they didn't bother clearing anybody out from underneath it. It actually flattens people underneath it.
I turn to the cop who gave us a warning, and I just give him this cockeyed look that says, really? Really?
Yeah. He just flips you off. Then throws you another free spin token. Standing on there, we're talking bright, bright, bright red cape with shoulders that go out like a foot on either side, okay, that curl up and these kind of cool Disney villain sort of look to it. There's a shimmer to it. There's a sort of material that looks like some sort of nanofiber material. Boots, incredible. Like, it looks like, I don't know what animal has red skin, but that's what it's made from. Maybe some special breed of crocodile or perhaps some sort of Komodo dragon kind of thing going up in there. Knee pads with spikes that are just look like they're just made of diamond sort of spikes. Okay. Tight leggings going over the thighs, but the quads are really clearly visible. I mean, Bryce has been doing his CrossFit like something crazy. Okay. Not going to get into the cod piece. The belt. Okay, now this is actually the championship belt, the Bryce Vegas championship belt he's got on.
I roll my eyes so hard they can hear it in the audience and attempt to make the J-O gesture with my chainsaw arm.
You're trying to, Brian, but you're like, you're still being blinded. You're wiping your eyes because of all the light shining from the belt in your eyes. Like, actual lasers are built into the belt. You're like, will they turn that spotlight off of the belt? Like, no, that is the belt. The belt just does that, okay? right? And the rippled six pack, okay, fully developed, okay. And he's just wearing the cape. And he's actually got a luchador mask on, which is kind of interesting. You know, he's got a mask on. And he whips it off, and it's Bryce.
I say, hello, Bryce.
Hey.
You ready to throw down?
I say I still owe you for this, and then I show my chainsaw hand, and then
did I do that?
You don't remember running around in your giant mech armor?
He's like, hold on one second. Reaches into his back pocket, pulls out your hand, flipping you off.
Dude, got you. Like, I mean, I'm on your team, but that's an own.
Okay. So I'm too frustrated. Walk off in frustration. Shadow boxing behind Justin as he steps to the plate.
Team meeting real quick. Well, I'm sure Bryce is in his pose down as he goes and does his way in.
Sure.
All right. Here's
the theme from Exodus plays, and he does his pose down.
Okay. All right. Listen. Look, he's posing down. Let's just do this. Let's try to lure him into just a side room for a quick conversation, and then we Dave his ass, right? And then
okay. But here's the thing: we can't Dave his ass before we go into a situation where we're going to kill him, because we're going into a fight to the death. And I don't know if you picked up the fact that he's a little pissed off at you because you wouldn't allow him in your shelter and you sent him to die during the apocalypse. So we have and no judgment on that, by the way. I'm trusting that puppet show is.
For the record, I don't remember that part of the story clearly.
Doesn't matter. We're past that.
Okay. So what do you recommend? When are we going to do this?
Well, he just did a back pose and everybody's like.
Okay, so here's what we need to do. We need to Dave his ass while we're fighting him. We need to find somebody to create a controversy that there is a usurper. We've rescued the real Bryce, and we are now going to take righteous vengeance out on the usurper.
Okay, but if we're still, this doesn't fix the part where we have to fight to the death against somebody who clearly outclasses us.
That's a good point.
I don't think we're gonna win in a face to face. Bluff and bluster aside, I don't think we have it in us.
We marshal the resources of Bryce Vegas to take out the usurper. Without his powers, he's got to have some stuff that won't be as powerful if people are actively trying to take him down.
Here's what we go for. We're gonna enter the battle, but before we do, we're gonna say our words, and then that's when we get that. That's when all eyes are on us, and we're gonna give the speech, and then we reveal the real Bryce. But how do we convince everyone that this is the real Bryce?
You would have to know something. A, we have to know who the usurper is, and number two, we would have to know something that the usurper doesn't.
Okay, we'll figure it out. I think we're on the same page here. But in fact, actually, why wait until the fight? It seems like everybody's listening to us right now. Let's just go. Let's just do it. Let's reveal.
So you're gonna say we're shooting our shot right now?
Why not? At least now he's not fully armed. He's just in a ridiculous costume. Now's the time to get him. Look at him.
We need to reveal who we are too.
Okay. All right. I grab the mic. I say, I'm gonna let you finish, but you gotta understand, we're not Mike Mustache and the other one.
How does the crowd take that?
I try to cue the crowd in a gasp.
The crowd's like, go on.
We know a little bit about the real story of your so-called great leader. And I just give the biggest of side eye to Bryce as I do so.
And they're like, go on.
And then I guess, oh man, Justin, it seems like right now would be a great time for us to do one of our night attack bits and they can figure out who we are, but I don't remember any of the bits from the albums, and that's probably all they're listening to.
I just lean into the microphone and go, That's
good. And then I bust out the Admiral Nelson. I'm like, "'Tis us, Admiral Nelson and Captain Morgan."
I mean, I would think the Captain Morgan, Brian Brushwood tracks would probably be a little bit more memorable. Those are the ones on the album, after all.
Okay, so actually, that's a good point. Okay, I say, "I also take corrections very well." And I say, you're a bottle of rum."
I'm not a bottle of rum. You know what? I'm the truth teller.
Wait, hold on. You're telling the truth?
Yes. The great Bryce has been imprisoned.
Wait, the great Bryce has been imprisoned? Now, but how would a bottle of rum know all of this?
I'm not a bottle of rum.
Everybody's looking at each other right now, trying to figure out.
And I say, all right. Now, Captain Morgan, if you're not a bottle of rum, then my name's not Brian Brushwood.
You're goddamn right, it is. You're a guy. I'm here for you, Brian.
I looked at the audience to see if they're getting it yet, if they figured out who we are.
They're like, "Oh, they thought that we didn't already know?"
Oh, damn. Okay.
You're not wearing any disguise, bro. Oh. Justin's wearing a mustache on top of his facial hair.
I
dramatically remove my mustache on top of my facial hair. And then I try to cue the audience again.
You weren't wearing a mask or anything.
Bryce turns to the crowd like, "See what I'm talking about? You see what I'm talking about? Did I exaggerate any of this?" And they're like, no. Kill them!
Hey, wait, no, sorry. The Captain Morgan bit aside. The man that has just told you the tall tale has been telling you tall tales since he first met you. The real Bryce.
Yeah,
has been
we watch it. The Bryce Show, Bryce's Tall Tales, every Sunday night.
I'm an incredible storyteller.
He has fed you. He is a usurper who sits on a throne of lies. We have the one true Bryce, the Bryce that he imprisoned so he could greedily take the throne.
He has the throne of lies. He's got a lot of thrones. The throne of lies is great. The throne of lies is actually made from emails of Brian sent to him.
It's one of my top three thrones.
Yeah.
We will reveal at our fight to the death. Not only will we righteously take out this fake Bryce, we will reveal to you the true Bryce that we have rescued.
Because we are invoking the rarely remembered wrestling rule of trial by quiz. And we'll not be fighting with our fists, but we'll have a quiz to figure out who's the real king of Bryce Vegas and who's the usurper.
Bryce reaches down into the crowd, and there's a guy with a hood on his head, pulls him up like superpowers. Obviously, he's using some enhancements, rips off the hood, and it's another Bryce. He goes, "Oh, you mean the guy you hit in your RV?"
I look with eye contact that conveys, "Wait, are you our good Bryce?"
Then he snaps him in half.
You killed good Bryce!
The shower of blood, but then he winks at you in Morse code.
Oh, wait. I turn to Justin and I say, "Do you know Morse code?"
No. Is that a dot or a dash?
And then
he winks at you, and then he does this sign with the blood across his the upper lip.
Mr. Mustache.
And he wipes away quickly before anybody else sees.
All right. Well, you want to know what? This quiz will go on. And with the new caveat that if we both get questions right, we
flashback
call it draw.
Into a deleted scene like Kylo Ren aboard the Millennium Falcon. We have Bryce Vegas Bryce. While Brian and Justin are heading towards the way and says, the old RV that I have no memories of whatsoever. But I'm going to go walk aboard it and take a look around.
That's when we totally beat him up and.
No, you guys were out there, but Bryce was alone inside of there.
I imagine good Bryce clone beat up actual Bryce. defying all the odds, and substituted himself for him.
How about this? We don't have a fight. In fact, we just say we love your city. Viva Bryce Vegas! And I try to start a chant.
I would imagine everybody's
well, good Bryce says, gentlemen, that's a great idea, but trapped inside the compartment, I had a lot of time to think.
What's your plan? Quick.
Oh, you're not going to like this. Next time on Journey Quest.
Oh, man, we just made another evil Bryce.
These Bryces are all the same.
They're deep down, I think they're all just Bryce. I think they all just double-crossing Bryces.
Gentlemen, let's do some picks.
I can't pick between these two picks because they're both so good for very different reasons. But over the weekend, I went and saw Game Night, which was amazing. It was great. It does a great job of keeping you guessing. It right around the time as a viewer, you think to yourself, wait a minute, are they just setting up so-and-so? A character will say, wait a minute, is this going this direction? And as a result, it's really, really fun and smart, and it's good, good, good. I also saw Annihilation, which is haunting and wonderful, and it's like a dream that I can't shake from my mind. Maybe I was overly primed going into this because I was revisiting. I was thinking about how much I enjoyed 2010 and went back and watched some explanations of the ending of 2001. And Annihilation is one of those mind screw jobs that it takes you to a place that is very, very sticky and very hypnotic and strange and surreal and dreamlike. And I loved it. If you liked the tone of The Arrival, then I guess Arrival is all it was called. Then you don't mind some scary, haunting images or spooky. It's more suspenseful.
There's some like thriller moments.
Then stick with Annihilation and go see it because I managed to see this never having even seen a preview, like not knowing anything about it.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And I would say if you saw the trailers or the previews, there are bits in the way that they cut those trailers that would deflate little bits of that movie.
Oh, really?
Like, I had seen different trailers and stuff. And it was, it's not like it gave, it's not like Get Out, which gave away like the entire movie.
Yeah. But more than you would like.
They were saying, oh, that's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Dive into Annihilation, not knowing anything if you're able.
And if you're outside the US, it's on Netflix. You can just watch it on Netflix.
Wow.
We reported on this on Cord Killers, cordkillers.com, where we'll be talking about it in spoiler time.
Retaining this stuff is not my strong suit.
Hey, by the way, John Francis Daly, who directed Game Night, is, of course, the kid from Freaks and Geeks and wrote Spider-Man Homecoming with his writing partner and is directing the Flash movie, or at least theoretically might direct a Flash movie. These DC things are never set in stone.
Sure.
Justin, have a pick?
Man, you want to know what? I don't know if I totally do. Really, the only thing that I watched, I didn't really love... I finished Altered Carbon and I kind of, man. It's just, look, I love Altered Carbon when it's trashy Blade Runner. I don't like it when it, the further it gets outside of this central whodunit kind of premise, I think the weaker it is. IMO. But it's amazingly shot. It looks amazing throughout. So
yeah, the twee drum circle flashbacks and all that, just
I think it's one of those things where that universe is so cool and the premises are so cool. I liked it so much better as a backdrop for a more kind of straight ahead story. And it kind of made me, it kind of crystallized a few thoughts that I had just about kind of mysteries in general, and specifically that sort of like noir detective kind of story where the less characters are involved in general, the better there are. And I think that this Alter Carbon tends to get off the rails the more characters they introduce, specifically since part of the universe is that those characters might not actually be those characters because you can body swap and stuff like that. So that's my thought on Altered Carbon.
Yeah, there's I won't get into any particular plot points there, but there was the movie Surrogates, which was kind of a cool premise. There's a lot of similarities here, and there's a point in Surrogates, and I'm going to spoil this, where this, you know, the real protagonist of the story announces that basically that this is a world in which people can like use these sort of robot simulations of themselves to go out into society and interact while you sit at home in a little pod. And the thesis of the movie is like, no, this is wrong. And then the point of the movie is like, you know what? We're going to get rid of this technology for everybody. And I'm like, wow, that's extremely immoral. That is extremely against every fiber of my being, the idea that I'm going to make this decision for everybody else all of a sudden. And I remember thinking like, oh, so like if somebody's in the middle of a surgery operating on a patient and you're going to shut this down now, that's fine. If somebody's flying an airplane, you're going to murder people and you're going to do this. There's a sort of a similar sort of thing that happens later on in Altered Carbon, or somebody says, yeah, we need to go do blank. And I'm like, that's horrifying. That's genocide. You're the monster. You're the monster here.
And also it's just like there's this thing that happens sometimes in these sort of like weird near future sci-fi stories, or where like the cool thing that makes the story cool is morally ambiguous and we're following characters that want to shut it down. And I've always found that weird. Because I'm always rooting against the protagonist that I'm supposed to like to succeed. Because I don't want to see the central premise of the show shut down, right? I want to see it explored and go forward. And so I think that that's another kind of general problem. I don't know. There's a lot of boobs, though.
My pick is, I've been listening to various Jeff Bezos talks he's given. And Jeff Bezos is a very fascinating guy, and you watch these talks and you see him sort of make some of the similar points. And then I've been listening to a biography of Jack Ma, founder of Alibaba, and it's interesting seeing some of the similar things they say. You're like, oh, well, they both make this point. Maybe there's something to that. So I've been very much enjoying Bezos and talking particularly about, you know, the early days of Amazon, and he looks at like what Amazon's kind of core goal was. You know, reducing friction, just the idea of reducing friction. And often you hear about an idea, someone says, I want to do this, or you have an idea, I want to do this, but you got to do blank, 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 blank. You know, where Amazon was like, how do we reduce the friction of what we're trying to do? And then he talks about, you know, the idea of focusing, just hyper focus on one thing. If you're a startup, whatever, focus on one specific thing. And, you know, base it on some real problem or something you really understand. And you think about how Amazon started off with like, okay, what's the pain of ordering things online or ordering things from catalogs? Solved it really, really well. Don't know if you know this. They did. And then Amazon as this growing company was facing the problem of like, you know, we need so much storage space, so much computational capabilities. We need all of this. And their vendors really weren't able to sort of keep up with their demand. And they said, you know, we need to just start deciding how to do this in-house. And, you know, we have the money and the resources to start buying servers and start to figure out how to do this. And they built their own in-house system for basically meeting with whatever divisions they had needing storage needs, whatever. If they needed to serve up images, let's come up with an easy way to store images. If we're doing A9 and we want to store up a bunch of data for doing, you know, geographic locations, whatever. And they built this system and they said, you know what? We think we could increase and scale this and start selling this service to other people because we've solved our problems well. And they really solved it in a way that like Microsoft or Google kind of sort of couldn't, because Amazon was consuming this product, and they were a company that was a retailer. They were a company that had to serve up and do a lot of things that were very consumer, you know, customer facing. And I think that's part of the reason why AWS is such a huge, it's the secret success story of Amazon. You know, it's really the profit driver for what Amazon makes its money. It's, you know, the amount of money they make from shipping things to you doesn't compare to the actual profit they make from the web services and hosting your Netflix videos and all this other stuff that these services they sell to somebody else. And that came from them saying, we have a real problem. We need a solution. And they're like, oh, we could sell the solution to other people.
Do you know the name of that talk or
I've just been looking at, there's a lot of, I've been watching several different Jeff Bezos talks, some of the early ones. He does a great one early on. Let me pull that up because there's a great one where he talks about, like, this was right after sort of like, you know, the I think the dot-com crash. And he was talking about, you know, like, what do you compare? People were comparing the internet, you know, the first internet, you know, rush to the gold rush. And he says, here's the problem. The gold rush ended. You know, they mined all the easily available gold out of California and there was no more gold. The dot-com crashed. It wasn't like, oh, you know, there's no more internet. You know, we ran out of internet.
Right.
It was, you know, that was sort of a really, you know, great point that he made. And he talks about how the best comparison was the electrification, about how when we electrified, and said that when we first put electrification, it was about one thing, putting light in homes. He shows the goal was, let's just put lights in homes. And then somebody said, you know, we've got electricity there. Maybe we could do other things with it, and like an electric fan. But the first electric fans, nobody had invented the socket. So if you wanted to power an electrical appliance, you had to screw it into a light bulb socket. Right.
Oh, wow.
So you had electricity, but you had no sockets. Right. And he showed this graphic of this washing machine that you'd sit on your front porch, this huge thing with this big tub. And it's made of, you know, wood and, you know, just this contraption with a motor. He says, here's the thing about this is not only like did you have to, like, you know, screw this thing in, there was no on off switch. Nobody had invented an on off switch yet. So, you know, on the appliances. And so that these were things that were like, oh, wait, OK. And that's very much kind of like early days sort of, you know, in it. So if you look up, I think maybe the 2005 entrepreneurship conference taking on challenge with Jeffrey Bezos of Amazon.
I think it is also covered in this TED 2003 talk, the electricity metaphor for the web's future.
Yeah, it sounds like a great.
So we'll have that linked in the show notes.
Yeah. So he's just, you know, this is a guy that, you know, people predicted the demise of Amazon since its inception. He's kept doing what they're doing. He's been very, very adamant about the goal was the growth of the company, not short term pleasing shareholders, et cetera, long term building value, et cetera. And just a very, very smart guy. And he makes this as this is a guy that even though he's the richest man in the world, still goes home and washes the dishes. So.
As well, it should be.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there you go. Gentlemen, Bryce, do you have a pick?
I do have a real quick one. I started playing that new Assassin's Creed game that came out last year, Assassin's Creed Origins. And as much as I am not a fan of these like huge open worlds with you know, tons of icons and all sorts of little things to do, I do end up finding a meditative element of those things where you're just kind of going around this huge ancient Egyptian and Egypt. Area world and exploring the world and finding new things to do and finding animals to hunt. There's something that rhythm, even if I don't really enjoy the game very much, I think that rhythm is really interesting. There's a new feature. I think it's out on PC and I think it's coming to the console soon called, I want to say it's like Discovery Mode or something. And so it takes place in ancient Egypt and it's this huge map and this mode will basically take you on a walking tour of these various parts of Egypt and will give you like a history lesson of like,
oh, cool.
Of here's the pyramids and here's kind of what we know about the pyramids and ancient life in this region. It's kind of a cool feature and it's really an unexpected thing for, you know, a game about vengeance and murder. So I don't know. I think it's a lot of people like Assassin's Creed games, so it's not like I'm saying anything unexpected to say that those are there's something to them, but there's something to this one that I like more than any of the other ones I've played. So.
Cool.
Sounds cool. Very cool. Gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.